David Beckham is coming to MLS, but should he name his team after a 1980s show? We're going to help you out understanding the players and coaches in their post-game press conferences. And finally, we're going to answer the age-old question, Frank Klopas or Frank Yallop? All this and more on MLS Olympico. Welcome to episode 2 of MLS Olympico. I am Seth Maycumber alongside Matt Ream. This is episode 2, Matt. Pretty amazing, don't you think?
I can't believe we've made it so far.
So far. I remember episode 1. You remember that?
Oh, I remember those days.
What a thought. So we're coming at you again with 3 different segments, breaking down all the news in American soccer mostly, but we'll go sometimes into a little European stuff. We're going to play promotion relegation. You guys saw that last week. And then we are going to give you a little translations in the soccer world. Some double speak goes on sometimes, and we want to make sure you understand what's actually going on with these quotes. And then finally, we're going to play a game called Either Or. You ready, Matt?
I'm ready.
And let's jump into it. FIFA has announced its most recent rankings, listing the United States as 13th. That puts them ahead of England, who's 15th, France, 18th, Mexico, 21. What do you think? Do you promote this idea or relegate it?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to really consider what these rankings actually mean. It's some complicated formula that takes into account recent results, the level of competitiveness in terms of those results, whether it's a friendly, a World Cup game, a qualifier, etc. It's important to ask, do they really matter? And I think they don't matter, which is why I'm going to relegate this idea. First of all, the USA was number 4 in the world in April 2006. Shortly thereafter, they participated in the 2006 World Cup. Do you remember how that went?
I think it went pretty well. We went home early because we were doing so well, right?
Yeah, they let us out early because we had a clear grasp of soccer. So they were like, "Oh, you don't need to be here. You don't
good
need
behavior.
To win anymore.
Good behavior. Good I behavior. Call it.
Right. No, we were first of all, we are not a seeded team. I believe. I think Italy was a seeded team in our group. We also had the Czech Republic and Ghana, and we sucked. We lost 2 out of our 3 games. Our measly point was a tie to Italy, a game that was not even a soccer game. Both teams were reduced beyond 11 players. We had 9 at the end. Italy had 10. So do rankings matter? I'm going to say no. Therefore, this doesn't mean anything. I'm going to relegate this idea.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you that the rankings don't matter. And it's nice to look at, it's nice to talk about for a little while, but I think you give the exact perfect example, that 2006 World Cup and being ranked so highly means nothing when it actually goes onto the soccer field. You know, this is something that is done on paper. And as we know, soccer is not played on paper. So these rankings mean very little. All they are just discussion points for a moment. They don't matter as much as being seeded or getting a victory or hoisting a cup. So, yeah, absolutely, I relegate this. Doesn't really matter very much to me at all.
FIFA is like the sports version of Whose Line Is It Anyway? Everything's made up and the points don't matter.
Ooh, I like that. On Wednesday, the New York Red Bulls play the Philadelphia Union to a 2-1 victory. Okay, so this is the Red Bulls' victory here. The most interesting talking point that came out of this game came in the 29th minute when the Union was awarded a free kick because Luis Robles held on to the ball for too long. Interestingly enough, the Union scored on the ensuing free kick. Mike Pecky was pretty disturbed afterwards, saying he was surprised by the call and that he'd never seen anything quite like this, especially when a goalkeeper hadn't been warned before. And he believes this might be the beginning of a larger trend. What do you think? Do you promote or relegate the idea of, you know, cutting down on time wasting with the goalkeeper?
Well, here's the thing. In soccer, there's a lot of activities, but a lot of things that go on that are essentially part of the game. Now, if you were to look at the specific translation or specific letter of the law, so to speak, I mean, soccer has laws of the game. Someone's probably going to crucify me for this. I don't remember how many there are. But there are a number of laws, 17 maybe. I could be wrong. There are a number of laws of the game. if you read them and take them literally, a lot of things go on in the professional game that are actually not allowed. For example, on throw-ins, you're supposed to throw the ball in from the place that the ball exited the field of play. Now, does that ever happen? No. One guy picks up the ball, puts it down, walks. The next guy comes up, walks a couple of steps forward. Oh, maybe I don't want to take it. Drops it. Another guy comes. Oh, I can't find anybody. While that happens, I'm going to keep walking up the field. So is that enforced? No. Referees rarely ever enforce it. Okay. Can you answer? Do you know what happens if you take a throw-in from the wrong spot on the field?
It's supposed to be redone, right?
No. The possession is supposed to go to the opposing team.
Wow.
Okay. More often than not, referees will just blow their whistle and tell the player to back up. Mm-hmm. Right? But that's one thing. That's the letter of the law, and it's not necessarily followed. Now, is this a bigger trend? I would say maybe. I think in MLS they're trying to crack down on certain things like diving and things that are really considered gamesmanship in most areas of the world. I think I'll promote this idea. I believe Mike Petke has seen the kind of officiating that goes on in this league. I think that he might have been surprised, but I think he's right. I think that the referees will be cracking down a little bit in this upcoming season.
Before I give my response to this, I have a question for you.
Oh, boy.
No, this is just a regular question. Do you think this is going to be easier to enforce than some of these other inconsistent laws that you bring up?
Well, the one I brought up was the throw-in. I mean, or for example, a wall on the free kick, right? You see them inch forward. Is it easy to enforce? I think so. I mean, it's fairly subjective, right? Because when does the goalkeeper have possession? You have 6 seconds after gaining possession. Now, if the ball's on the ground in front of the goalkeeper, he has not yet picked it up, maybe he's not in possession. Maybe he is. It's kind of subjective. And that's the thing about the laws of the game, is that they allow for a certain level of subjectivity by the referee, right? Now, what I might see, or what we might see, is a ref counting, ticking off on his fingers, 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. I mean, you've seen players do that in the past on the opposing team, you know, trying to let the ref know, hey, he's holding onto the ball too long, he's wasting time, right? We might see that. I think it would be unfair for a referee to make a decision as to when the goalkeeper has possession, but then not tell him when he made that starting point, or when he decided that the goalkeeper, he was going to start counting. So, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely promote this idea under the idea that goalkeepers are probably the best at time wasting. They always have to pick up their socks, or the ball's floating away, or, you know, they have to push some guy out of the way to get to the top of the box. But my problem is, and you brought this up a little bit already, that there's such inconsistency with these types of things. If it's going to be called on a consistent basis, week in, week out, during the same game, then I'm fine with it. But I'm concerned that this is going to be something that's just too subjective, that, you know, a goalkeeper falls down and is holding his leg or something like that, and, you know, it's not, they're not counting that 6 seconds. And I go back and I think about the 2012 World Cup, not the World Cup, 2012 Women's Olympics, where the United States got a free kick that helped get them into the finals of the Olympics. And that was such a shock. I had never seen a game like that where a goalkeeper held on to the ball too long, the other team got awarded a free kick, and then it led to, eventually, they got a penalty kick afterwards, but it eventually led to a very important goal in that game. And last night, that goal could have been very, very important, especially if it was a regular season game. So if it's not called consistently, then I'm going to relegate the idea. I think it's going to be just like the throw-in rule, just like the wall rule, just like some of these other rules that get forgotten about during the hectic nature of a game. So I'm going to relegate this idea.
All right. I think I agree with you. I mean, the consistency is important, and it is an issue because you have different referees refereeing different games, different scenarios. You know, I think MLS is trying to take a step in the right direction with having people reviewing controversial calls and having, you know, like a committee. I was at a Chicago Fire Kansas City game last year, and I saw Michael Kennedy, who used to ref in the league. He's a really, really tiny guy. It's hilarious watching him, or formerly watching him, walk up to players, you know, who are over 6 feet tall and try and tell them, oh, you get a yellow card or something like that. But I actually saw him. I recognized him from games, and I talked to him a little bit. And they do evaluate referees, so I think that is a step in the right direction.
All right, most recently, we have the news of David Beckham and Miami. A report came from the Palm Beach Post saying that David Beckham might be considering the name Miami Vice. Now, this has now been refuted by David Beckham's publicist, saying that was never the choice. But what do you think of the name Miami Vice? Do you like it, Matt?
I like it from a comedic standpoint. I like it because I think it's hilarious. I like it because, to an extent, it brings publicity to the league. However, I don't like it because I think that if you want to have a team in America that's a serious team, that will be a competitive team, I think it's too cheesy and too joking of an idea in terms of the name. It's almost poking fun at itself. And I don't think if you're trying to build a team, build a fan base, I don't think that that's a good start, is to name it after a mediocre 1980s TV show.
Does it have to be named after the TV show?
Well, I mean,
obviously that's what people are going to think of, but I don't know. Vice is kind of a cool name.
Like a bad, you know, as opposed to a virtue. You mean?
Yeah, bad boy David Beckham. Come on, he's got tattoos and stuff like that. He's a bad boy.
You might say that tattoos are his vice.
Ooh, yeah, I think I might agree with you. It leads to too many jokes. I think it could be a cool name by itself if we lived in a world where that TV show never existed, and sometimes I do wish I lived in that world. But I think that TV show does exist. A lot of people just think it's a hilarious show. You know, immediately there's going to be pictures of David Beckham, you know, dressed in that type of clothing that gets circulated around. And, you know, it automatically opens itself up to TIFO when you go to different stadiums and they want to make fun of David Beckham. They want to make fun of the team. That's automatically what they're going to do. They make it too easy. They become too easy of a target. The other name that was brought up is the Miami Current. What do you think of that name?
Well, I mean, Miami is on the Atlantic Ocean, and when I heard current, you know, I think of a rapidly moving flow in a larger body of water, and so it makes sense. I mean, you know, from a tradition standpoint, I mean, you know, okay, for example, Seattle Sounders. All right, well, Seattle's located on the Puget Sound. Now, I don't know if that's specifically the reason they picked that name, but Portland Timbers. Portland has a forest around it, presumably. I don't know. So I think, you know, based on the trends, I think that that name is actually a good name. I heard also that there was another undisclosed name that was tied to a corporate sponsor, much in the way that New York Red Bull is tied to Red Bull. So I don't know if I like that idea. I like a name based on kind of the geographical location or the characteristics of the location itself.
Do you think, would you be okay, considering David Beckham is going to be a part of this team, that the team were to have a more British name? Because those often get snubbed quite a bit in MLS because, well, you know, we're not from Great Britain. We're not in England. So would you be okay with it? A little bit more compared to, like, I don't know, FC Dallas or DC United or something like that?
So like sort of a traditional soccer, you know, United or FC or...
Yeah, I mean, it'd be a little bland, but would you be more okay with it compared to, I don't know, Toronto FC or something?
I mean, you know, I think that from a soccer standpoint, you know, there is something to be said about, you know, FC, whatever, United or something, you know, but... That being said, this is the United States, and we, you know, whether we like it or not, we have a unique soccer history. And I mean, why base something off of another country's soccer history? You know, now that being said, I don't want some stupid like Soccers or something like that, you know, but I think it would be interesting to have sort of a unique name that nobody else in the world has. And I mean, come on, we threw out all the tea in Boston for a reason. For the New England Revolution.
To have that name later on.
Well, we don't. Yeah, and we don't want English stuff over here. No, I don't know.
No, it'll be interesting. I'm sure we're going to talk about it again because we've got quite a while to talk about Miami, whatever, and David Beckham. So it'll be pretty interesting to say what happens with that name. But I agree with you. I think I'd rather see the current compared to the Vice, or especially like you said, I don't really want to see a corporate logo. I think that diminishes the whole point.
Or a joking kind of not serious, like the Miami David Beckhams. I mean, that's hilarious, but that not really.
I just couldn't imagine. I know it's funny and it goes out there. I just couldn't imagine them doing that. That's just such a bad move.
I agree.
We got Benji Joya, who joined the Chicago Fire recently. A very interesting kid coming from Mexico, playing with the U-20s in the U-20 World Cup. He's very happy here, and according to most of the interviews I've heard, all the interviews, because what else is he going to say? And he says that he hopes to establish himself one day as the next Clint Dempsey. What do you think? Is he the next Clint Dempsey?
I think he... I'm gonna relegate that, and the reason being is because he's a unique player. He's an individual. To some extent, yeah, it's great that he's modeling himself after a current U.S. international, but he's his own player, and I think he would be wise to model his game after a number of different players rather than Clint Dempsey here. I mean, Clint has been pretty inconsistent recently, so it's kind of interesting the timing of this comment here by Joya. But that being said, I mean, I think he's a decent player with a lot of potential. I think it's good that he is now loaned to MLS. It'll remain to be seen what sort of impact he has with Chicago. Looking kind of at his history in the two years or so that he was with Santos Laguna, he only played four times. He only had four first-team games. I know he's still young, but maybe him being in Chicago, maybe that'll give him a good opportunity to get some minutes, to establish himself a little bit more, and to get some looks from Klinsmann in the future. Klinsmann's already shown that he's willing to call up younger players, with Luis Gil recently being in camp. And a couple other youngsters as well. So I think it's great that he wants to play for the U.S. So I'm going to promote that aspect, but I don't think he should be looking to play like Clint Dempsey.
I'm going to promote this because I like the idea that he is ambitious. He wants to pick someone like Clint Dempsey, and I like that because Clint Dempsey is such a different player, such a creative player, such an individualistic player that can do like very great things on the ball. We brought up 2006 World Cup, and that was overall for the United States, that was pretty disastrous. But Clint Dempsey stepped up as a guy that was pretty much unknown and did some amazing stuff and turned heads. And, you know, Joya could be that type of player in the future. You know, the type of guy that when he gets the ball, he does these magical things. And I think back in Seattle, and he didn't do very well when he was in Seattle, but there are just some really cool, fun moments that he had where he, you know, crossed the ball by, you know, crossing his legs and chipping it in and these different moments of being an individual. And I think we want individuals in U.S. soccer. That sometimes we get too bland. You look at someone like Landon Donovan, great player, amazing player, but he's more bland on the field. You know, like Donovan's best moment was probably when he put those glasses on in the Gold Cup and they got immediately smashed off of him, you know? So Clint Dempsey was, you know, against the Chicago Fire, Clint Dempsey, when he scored a goal, did the stop, drop, and roll, you know? And Clint Dempsey went over to England and had one of the most successful careers that America has ever had over there. So to have that ambition, I'm totally for it. To say that he wants to be like Clint Dempsey one day, and to say that he hopes to one day replace Clint Dempsey on the national team, and he's actually even wearing the number 8 number on his back. You know, that's really ambitious. That's really good to see. And what I like most about it is that he has the talent to back it up. And you've mentioned this as well. You know, it's different for me to say I want to be Clint Dempsey. as I sit on this couch and talk about this. But for him to say this and to have an assist in the very first game with the Chicago Fire and then have a goal last night that was a very beautiful goal, that's great to see. So not only is he saying these things, but he's backing it up with his skill.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing about Clint Dempsey that, you know, and obviously he's shown moments of brilliance. He's scored goals. He can be kind of a scrappy player, really. You know, he is kind of billed as a creative player, so to speak. The one moment, though, that really stands out in my mind, and I can't remember if it was, it might have been against Brazil, or it was against some team. It could have been in, I want to say it was Brazil in the 2009 Confederations Cup final. I know Evan, my brother Evan, not Tim, will be able to know exactly what game it was. But Dempsey tried some sort of little pullback around his plant leg, something where he had no idea what was behind him. It was a little clever move, but he was closer to his defensive third than his attacking third. He had almost no support behind him, and he lost the ball because he pulled it back in a direction that he really had no idea where the pressure was. Now, yes, he's trying to be creative, he's trying to be fancy, but sometimes we need players who can just play simple, who can keep the ball. And I think Landon Donovan, you say he's bland, well, yeah, but he hardly ever gives up possession. He plays very, very simple. I think for a young player, yes, you do want players with skill, but you also want players who aren't going to make stupid mistakes, which is why, I don't know, I think Joya should really look to model his game after a number of other players before Clint Dempsey. Now, that being said, who knows? Chicago, Frank Yallop is the coach. Frank Yallop loves to bypass the midfield. That's a different topic altogether. I'm not a huge fan of his style of coaching or play. We'll see if Joya actually flourishes under the system or not. I mean, right now the jury's out. He's played a total of, I think, 120 minutes over the course of three games. Yes, he's gotten a goal. Yes, he had an assist. But it's preseason. And the goal and the assist came against DC United. Sorry, Evan, but it's DC United.
Yeah, and I think you do bring up some good points. I think when you model your style or your career after someone, I think it's also important to recognize that you want to be better than that person. You don't want to just be that person. You want to be better than that person. I think that that's what he's kind of going for here, that he's modeling his career after this guy. And I think it's also important to realize that, yes, Landon Donovan is a probably more solid player overall. He is a more solid player overall, but you could also argue he was a less ambitious person. You know, staying in MLS all of his career, which wasn't necessarily a bad move. But, you know, Clint Dempsey went over, experienced Europe, had some really great moments, got some attention for himself and for MLS and for American soccer. So I don't think it's a bad thing to model himself after him a little bit, as long as he understands that he should be better than Clint Dempsey and he should learn from Clint Dempsey's mistakes and stuff like that.
I mean, at the end of the day, that's what it's all about, right? Is, you know, there have to be players ahead of you to really pave the path. And, you know, I think every additional U.S. player who's successful is going to be looking to their peers or their, you know, the guys that came before them for, you know, as an example or for, you know, maybe an example of something that of what not to do or what to do or, you know, I mean, it's people who are trailblazers, so to speak. So,
moving to from the future of the U.S. men's national team to a guy who's supposed to be the present, Stuart Holden is supposedly going to have an assured contract this summer. This comes from Bolton News. What do you think of this idea that Stuart Holden might have an assured contract coming up this summer, fresh off an injury?
Well, I was looking at it, and it looks like he's assured a contract through the 2014-2015 season. I honestly, this is a guy who he's had three major injuries in the past, 5 years or so. I mean, he's really not played a whole lot of soccer altogether. He might have lost a number of years in his prime because of these injuries. I think it's great that Bolton has shown, or in theory is showing, some faith in him. Because because he's at a point where not a lot of teams would want to take that risk, that chance. Now, they've seen him play, and he's been with them for, since 2010? I could be wrong. But he's been there for a while, right? I think he has the ability, once he's healthy, to make an impact and to be a two-way player for them. Now, it's all about whether or not he can stay healthy. I think that it's great that he made an appearance in the U.S. Men's National Team January camp. No one expected that. No one knew about it. He did some training there. Sounds like he's back to, minimal training with Bolton now. But I promote the idea. I think that's the first step on the path to making it back to maybe contributing to the U.S. team in the future. Obviously not this World Cup, but who knows?
Yeah, for me, I'm going to relegate this idea on two different ideas. One, Stuart Holden's a great player. He has great potential, and when he was healthy, even during the Gold Cup, he had a lot of great moments and showed a lot of great stuff. But he's so injury prone. I just think that it'd be better for Stuart Holden to come home. And I think if I'm Bolton, it's too risky to sign this guy up again and to kind of continue to be loyal to this guy. I think it would be better for Bolton to kind of move on. I think it might be better for Stuart Holden to come back home, playing MLS for a while. I know that Europe is this amazing thing, that Europe is this grand oasis that players want to go to and experience and all that kind of stuff. But with MLS getting stronger, I think it might be better for him to come back here. I know that it's also sometimes considered a more physical league and then maybe he gets injured again. But why not come back now, make that big splash, get some decent money from the certain teams, as long as he can stay healthy and prove that he can stay healthy. I'd rather see him come home, and I'd rather see Bolton spend their money elsewhere on a guy that maybe is less injury prone.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think he's injury prone, or do you think that he's just unfortunate? Because his first injury, he broke his leg. It was Nigel de Jong for the Netherlands who slid into him when his foot was planted and broke his tibia, fibula, one or both, I don't remember. Maybe it was just a fracture. So that was, I think anybody in that situation is going to break their leg. Second one, Johnny Evans, Man U, slid into his knee. His cleat tore through the knee and I think somehow injured something in his knee. But, I think if I was in that situation, I think if somebody slide tackled my knee, cleats up, metal studs like they probably wear in those wet, muddy conditions over in England, that would hurt. And the last one, I think he just landed wrong. Now that's maybe injury prone, maybe unlucky, I don't know. But it's not like he's coming up with like a knock every week. It's not like he's getting these muscle injuries because he's not fit or not taking good care of his body. He's had some really unfortunate injuries. So I think if I'm a team, as long as we can keep him healthy, as long as nobody, goes two-footed into his legs, I think we'd be fine.
I agree with you that it's probably more unlucky than anything else. But with every surgery, you do become a little weaker, and that's what concerns me. I guess my point is not as solid as I hoped it would be, because you can get injured anywhere. He can get injured just walking down the street or something like that, or playing with his kids or whatever it might be. I just feel like at this point where MLS is getting stronger, MLS is growing, that it might be a good move to come back home and to just kind of play a little safer, where maybe they can manage his minutes a little bit more, take care of him a little bit more, and then he can get to the point where he's contributing to the national team. Because that's my big concern. This guy's never really contributed like in a full-out, here's all your potential type of way. And Stuart Holden has a lot to offer. And the other side of it is that if I'm Bolton, I know that I'm relegated at this point. How long do I hold on to a player who hasn't really been with me a lot? I know that at one point he was rated as one of the best players in the Premier League and all that kind of stuff. But it just seems like there has to be a point where you move on a little bit.
Well, I think, first of all, do you think he would garner the kind of salary in MLS that, say, someone like Maurice Adoue
yeah.
would get? You think yeah. so?
Maurice Adoue had the same type of history of being injured a little bit and stuff like that. And Stuart Holden is going to produce more of an attacking flair. Like, Maurice Adoue isn't quite as exciting. So I don't put him at Michael Bradley money or no. Clint Dempsey money, but I can see him getting $1.5 or $2 million or something like that if the right deal is in place and the right situation is in place.
Yeah, I suppose so. I did actually look this up. Bolton right now, I believe, is in 19th place in the championship. That's out of 24 teams. They're three spots ahead of the relegation zone, which would be down to, I guess, the first division. I think if he's regaining his fitness, maybe Bolton thinks that, okay, he could provide us a little bit of a push for the end of the season so that we can stay up in the championship. Because, I mean, as you probably know, the further down you slip in England, the less and less money you earn from TV, from, you know, fans. I mean, you know, it goes on.
But to be fair, it's more and more likely that you'll get Breck Shea on loan the further you slip down. That's the rule. All right, with that, we are going to go to our first break. We will be right back with translations.
Some soccer translations. Now, being a fan of soccer, there are always those moments where general managers, coaches, players seem to speak in a cryptic manner. Whether or not that's because they don't want to divulge information or because they were told what to say, who knows? But we will help you guys out with a couple of quotes. Our first coaching translation, Carl Robinson, head coach of the Vancouver Whitecaps, stated that he was excited to see Sebastian Fernandez and Nicolas Mezquita in person. Interestingly enough, he had not actually seen these players prior to last Wednesday when they were training with the team. What do you think of this?
To me, this means that we haven't gone very far as MLS scouting networks go. That we're not seeing a lot of players live, that we are relying on video, we're relying on other people's opinions and stuff like that. I think this really highlights to me that we haven't created the networks that we need to have as a league. Some teams talk about bringing people in on trial, but not every player is going to come in on trial, especially to MLS. No matter how you phrase it, they're going to know that it's a trial. So to bring these two players in, first of all, it's pretty risky to me, but also it speaks volumes to the fact that we don't have a designated coaching network. What do you think of this? What does this mean to you?
Well, to me, if I'm a head coach at a professional soccer team anywhere, I would not be admitting that I had not seen players that my club had just signed in the past. I mean, this is a club that was, they've been okay. They obviously have the well-known saga of, was it Camilo? Camilo, mm-hmm. who who wanted out before they wanted him out. So now they've admitted that not only has their best player gone, but they're signing players who they've never seen. It's just unheard of to me. You would not see someone like Sir Alex Ferguson saying, okay, I know this player is good because someone told me, but I've never actually seen him. That wouldn't happen. So I agree with you. It really highlights how poor our scouting network is, at least with some of these teams. Now, I don't know if bigger teams, LA Galaxy, Bruce Arena would never, ever say that, ever. Ever.
So when he says this quote, so he says, I have not directly seen these guys. When he says this, is this Carl Robinson being a new coach, not knowing how to properly speak, or is this Carl Robinson maybe taking a little heat off of him if these guys don't work out?
That's a good point. I think part of it certainly because he's a first-year coach. You know, maybe he hasn't experienced the media that much from a coaching standpoint. Obviously, he was a player, I believe, for New York and maybe Toronto. I don't have it on top, you know, off the top of my head. But I think some of that is an experience as a coach. But you're right. I mean, if somebody at the club has signed these players, or you know, he himself has not had a hand in getting these players to Vancouver, maybe he is putting a little bit of the blame aside or kind of pointing it in a different direction. That's a very good point. That is a strategy that coaches do often employ at various levels, finding a way to keep the pressure off themselves so they can obviously keep their jobs if something happens. So
it's not always coaches that say interesting things to the media. Philly CEO Nick Sakowitz, who is an interesting character who sometimes says things quite boldly, he came out and said, "I get frustrated when I see how people say how smart Toronto is to spend $90 million. I get frustrated when I see Tim Leiwicki breaking the bank up there. If we spent that, we'd be mortgaging the team for 20 years." What does this mean?
This is, I think, a case of sour grapes. I think this is Sakowitz is frustrated with the fact that his team either failed to make a signing with the impact of, you know, someone like Michael Bradley or Jermaine Defoe or Julio Cesar, the goalkeeper who allegedly is coming in. I think there's a certain extent that there's a little bit of jealousy here and a little bit of, you know, why didn't we do something like that? I mean, yeah, they've signed Maurice Adu, but let's be honest here, Maurice Adu or Michael Bradley. I guess we'll talk about that later. But anyway, the answer should be obvious in my opinion. I don't know. What do you think?
I agree with you, but I wonder if it's sour grapes towards Toronto or if it's sour grapes towards the league. Is he upset because Toronto is doing this and Toronto is spending the money, or is he upset because the league rules just aren't clear enough? And that's where I think that the issue here is. And I think that's the issue league-wide. I think that he's a little upset because he's not sure what's going on as far as some of these league rules. I also think that we're starting to see a split between the haves and the have-nots in MLS, and that's really frustrating for small market teams. So you look at a team like Philadelphia, are they ever going to be in contention for that type of money? You know, you talk about not only, like you mentioned, it's not just Michael Bradley, but it's also Defoe, it's also Cesar, it's also Gilberto. I mean, all these different players that they bought over this time. So I agree that you would sour grapes. It's pretty clear what this means, but it might be directed at multiple sources, maybe hoping to have more transparency, if that's possible.
Which in MLS, obviously, we know that transparency is about as clear as a brick wall.
Absolutely. Our last one here comes from Claudio Bieler, who lost his starting position to Dom Dwyer, who spent a lot of his year down in USL Pro. Very simply, Bieler said, "I'm happy to be back." What does that mean?
I think he's trying to start the season fresh. To some extent, it was kind of obvious that there was some tension between Bieler and Peter Vermes last year towards the end of the season. Here you have one of the better players at the club from an attacking standpoint, and he wasn't playing. He was maybe coming off the bench, but he was not a significant fixture in the lineup towards the end of the season. I think he's trying to wipe away those memories and start off on the opposite foot, or you know, fresh start, whatever cliche saying we can tag with that.
I'm going to go a little bit of a different direction here. I think he's saying this because he's contracted with Sporting KC. He already has a contract with these guys. He's stuck with these guys. He has to kind of say this because no one wants to sit on a bench. If you're a soccer player, you want to play. And yeah, okay, maybe it's about having a fresh start and again, whatever cliche you want to say. But I think more than anything else, he has to say he's happy to be back. Unless he's talking maybe back home, like he's talking to a local media outlet. But if he's going to be talking to MLSsoccer.com, which is where this quote comes from, he's going to say that. Does he mean it? I don't know. I think that, you know, there are some positives in playing for the team that just won the MLS Cup. But if you're the guy that's coming off the bench and you're the guy that's sitting on the bench for most of the game, he's probably not 100% happy to be there.
Well, right now, he can say whatever he wants. I mean, it's preseason. Most likely, Vermes is playing most of the players that are in camp, probably playing all of them in a lot of these preseason games. I'm sure he's getting time. So right now, he's not frustrated. He can say, oh, things are great. I'm happy, etc. We'll see if that continues, let's say 10 games into the season. Maybe he's not starting. Maybe it's like a continuation of last year towards the end. What's he going to say then? Do you think that frustration would boil over? Do you think he gets to put on, or do you think he's going to keep a happy face on just for the media?
It's a difficult thing when you bring foreign players into this league because it's certainly different than most other leagues. And so we'll see what happens with Claudio Bielsa, and we'll see you after the break to play Either Or. If it keeps on raining, love is going to break. If it keeps on raining, love is going to break. When the levee breaks, have no place to stay. So we are going to play a game called Either Or. Quite simply, we're going to take a look at two choices, and we're going to pick which one we like best. Our first one, Tim Leiwicki made news when he said 10 out of 10 times he would pick Michael Bradley over Maurice Adu. The question to you, Matt, is who do you take, Michael Bradley or Maurice Adu?
I think it's a very clear choice. I would absolutely 100% take Michael Bradley. Now, he definitely comes with a higher price tag, but I think he deserves that higher price tag. He is a much better player than Maurice Adu. He has played at a much higher level. He is much more consistent. He plays much more often for the U.S. men's national team. And he's a world-class player.
I'm going to go with Maurice Adu because of the salary cap. $6 million versus $1.5 million. Which one are you going to get more of an investment out of? Maurice Adu can do a serviceable job in the midfield. I don't think he's going to be that much of a difference as far as Michael Bradley goes. Michael Bradley's clearly a better player in the international field, but I don't know if he's going to be that much different in MLS. Maurice Adu also has a little bit of versatility, can play on that back line as well. So when you look at the numbers of it, I'm going to choose Maurice Adu because he's probably more obtainable to more teams.
All right, next, Either Or. Worst Colorado Rapids misstep: loaning Tony Cascio to Houston, or trading Hendry Thomas, I don't even know if that's how you pronounce his first name, to FC Dallas?
Tony Cascio's tearing it up right now in Houston, but we have to remember Tony Cascio can go back to Colorado after the end of the year. So I'm going to go Andre Thomas being traded to FC Dallas because that's something that they're going to miss in their midfield. So they have Dylan Powers or they have Nate Sturgis, but is he going to bring the same veteran presence? Is he going to bring the same bite to the midfield that Thomas brought? Especially with a young team, I think Thomas was going to be more valuable to the Rapids, and they got rid of him without having a suitable replacement.
I'm going to pick loaning Tony Cascio. And the reason I say that is because Thomas, you're not that good of a player. You played maybe 50 times, 55 times for Wigan, scored 0 goals. Colorado, you had 35 games, scored 2 goals. One was a penalty kick. Penalty kicks don't really count as goals. And even in Honduras, when you played for Olimpia, you played 143 times in 8 years. That is not a lot of times. And you're a holding midfielder. You are less impactful in this game than, say, a winger, someone who is creative, who's quick, pacey. I think losing Tony Cascio, I think that is a much larger misstep.
Talking about expansion now. First to win the MLS Cup, NYCFC or Orlando City?
I'm going to go with NYCFC because they have Jason Kreis. And Jason Kreis has won an MLS Cup, and he has made it to, I believe, at least one other. And a couple, a U.S. Open Cup final, Supporters Shield.
Champions League.
Champions League final, right? And they're going to have Sergio Aguero. They're going to have Yaya Toure. They're going to have Joe Hart. And who's that fourth player? Eden Dzeko, because, I don't know, just because. But they're going to definitely win an MLS Cup.
I'm really tempted to say Orlando City because Kreis doesn't win championships, except for that one in 2009. And even then, you know, it was very close. It came down to the wire. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think it's going to be Jason Kreis. I think Orlando City is going to have better fan support. I think Orlando City is going to have a better first year. But I think NYCFC is going to have the players and the resources to win the MLS Cup first. So, yeah, NYCFC is going to have a championship before Orlando City and before the New York Red Bulls. You heard it here first.
All right. Our next either-or. Which Frank is more likely to succeed? Frank Klopas up in Montreal or Frank Yallop, who took Frank Klopas' job in Chicago?
I'm going to go with Frank Yallop because, first of all, I think it's going to make you extremely mad. And second of all, I think Frank Yallop has a better career of winning. I don't think that he necessarily plays the most attractive soccer, but I think the guy knows how to win. He lobs the ball up the field. He gets to important players that can put the ball in the back of the net. And they got some creative guys in like Mike McGee and Benji Joya that we talked about before. They got a pretty decent team up in Chicago. So on the flip side, Klopas and Montreal haven't really done much at all this offseason. So I think Yallop is going to be more successful.
Unfortunately, I have to agree with you. I have to agree that Frank Yallop is going to be more successful, and there's a couple of reasons for that. First of all, initially when you started talking, I was thinking, oh, Montreal by a landslide. They made the playoffs last year. What did Chicago do? They tanked in a must-win game against New York, where they would have made the playoffs, I believe, if they had won. And I didn't think Mike McGee was going to be able to replicate his scoring from last year. However, I think Montreal has lost some important pieces of the puzzle. They were old to begin with. I think their guys are just going to get older. And I think that Yallop has had some success in this league. Now, whether or not that's going to be an attractive product on the field is the jury's out on that one. But they did sign a couple of defensive pieces proven in MLS from Seattle. Patrick Ianni and John Kennedy Hurtado, I believe. I think so. That's how important Jaleel Anibaba was. But anyway, I believe that Chicago is definitely going to succeed, whether that's by a point or a lot of points.
Last one. Who is going to be the superior conference this year, the Eastern Conference or the Western Conference?
I really want to say the Western Conference because I'm from the West. West Coast is the best coast, and unfortunately, I am a San Jose fan. However, I'm going to have to say the Eastern Conference. I think there are more interesting things going on in the East. I think that, you know, first of all, they have the reigning champions. Second of all, Toronto has signed some big players. Philly has Maurice Adu, so obviously they're going to be crazy good. And DC has made some interesting moves as well.
Funny, I was actually really prepared to argue because I just want to disagree with you on this one anyway. but I totally believe that the Western Conference is going to be better this year because when you look at it, they play better soccer and they have more well-rounded teams. The Eastern Conference has the Crew, which really haven't done much this offseason, and I could see them being like DC United or Chivas USA in the past. The East also has Montreal, which we just talked about. New coach, aging DeVio. not many moves happening so far. I'm not really confident that they can put it together. I'm still not sold on DC United. I know they made a lot of big moves, but Ben Olsen, we don't know yet if he's truly a great coach. I mean, he had a good year, and then he won the Open Cup last year, but we don't know for sure if this guy's, you know, around for good. In the Western Conference, who's the weak guys? I guess FC Dallas you'd point to. Chivas USA. But Chivas USA has had a quiet and active offseason. Will they put it together on the field? I don't know. I don't know if they'll put it together on the field.
The jury's out.
But they're very, very quiet but active. So you hope that at least some of these moves are coming through. So I think that the Eastern Conference has more question marks. The Western Conference has more explanation marks.
And I will say that I think the Western Conference does have three of the top teams in the league. None of those teams are San Jose. But I do like the way Portland plays very much. I think Salt Lake has always had a pretty good team. And it kills me, it pains me to say it, but Los Angeles Galaxy. I mean, they, regardless of how they look, how they play, they are a good team and they do get results.
So with that, Matt, we have fully gone through and powered through the sophomore slump. What do you think? What do you think today?
I think we're gonna have to make a decision on the contract extension for next year, so to speak. But it's good to be done with the second episode. Hopefully, if you're listening, all three of you, hopefully you actually enjoyed it. And I don't know, do you have anything to plug for this week? Or
yeah, check out my work on total-mls.com. I was just down at the media roundtable at Gillette Stadium talking with President Brian Bilello and Mike Burns. So that's recap is up there. Follow me on Twitter at SethMan31. Matt, how about you?
I'm on Twitter as well, sometimes more often than not. And I am at Flying Goose. That is 1G, so it's Flying Goose. I also have a blog, AmericanSoccerCoaches.blogspot.com. I'm working on a couple of pieces right now, but I have not had time to finish them. So I am hoping that they will come out soon. And I think that's about it. I just listened to the first 11 podcasts today. Very well done by Abram and Evan, my brother, not Tim. So check that out if you guys have time. And you can find us on Pickup Soccer as well on the weekends.
Absolutely. Follow at Evan Ream and at Mind of Abram, the geniuses behind the AASP network. Although Hank Alexon, at Hisco5, he's also a big part of it as well. That's it. I'm Seth, he's Matt, and this has been MLS Olympica.
And it's over.